and I believe together the industry and the academic communities in the areas of data mining and data analysis, we can work together and bring a collective effort to build a reputable and profitable clusters of research in the Greater Toronto Area. I would like also like to thank Manifold for putting this seminar together, and I would like also to thank all of you for coming today. Before my scientific presentation, I would like to say a few words about the Laboratory for Industrial and Applied Mathematics at York University. This is a newly funded laboratory at York University with support from a few federal funding agencies and some industry partners, including the Canadian Foundation for Innovation, the Ontario Innovation Trust, Canada Research Chairs Program, and NSEC. The mission of the program of the laboratory is try to serve the educational and the training needs for in both industry and applied mathematics, and to foster a research-intensive environment and to create opportunities and to provide locus for industry outreach at York University. The academic support to the laboratory includes several clusters of researchers from our pure and applied mathematics division, from our information technology group, and from our statistics division. I'll just give you some idea about the spectrum and the strengths of the research clusters at York University in industry and applied mathematics. We did try. I saw this already. Is it now better? Thank you. Here's a very short list of some projects currently held at the laboratory. We have a CRC, Canada Research Chair Program, related to dynamic systems with applications to neural networks, to data analysis, and to population biology. There are quite a few MITAX research projects. There is one in financial mathematics, the project in epidemiology, projects on pattern recognition and pattern storage, and also some projects on semiconductor manufacturing processes. Those are all in association with some government funding agencies, research centers like Environment Canada, Health Canada, Center for Space Science and Earth Research, and some number of industry partners. And I would like to also mention that there are lots of opportunities for industry collaboration. The industry company can be a partner, a sponsor to the laboratory, can provide internships, the much needed internships for our students in the two new programs, the Master of Science for Industry and Applied Mathematics, the Financial Engineering Diploma Program. The company will be more than happy to work with companies to sponsor research seminars like the one we're doing today, workshops, conferences, and so on and so forth. And we also need your help to provide us research projects for our students and for our faculty members. It's a relatively new laboratory, it's only half a year by now, and I cannot say much about our success story. The only thing I can promise you, we do value all the opportunities for industry collaborations, and we'll do our best to keep the opportunities grow. So that's the commercial part of my talk, and just give you an indication how we value the collaboration. I never bring my business card to any academic conferences. This is one of the few exceptions. So I will leave my business card here. If any of you have advice, comments, suggestions, I will be more than happy to talk and meet with you. Okay, so that's the commercial part of my talk. Now let me move to the academic part. What I would like to talk about today is a new neural network architecture which we have been designing in order to find patterns, find features in larger data sets in high dimension spaces. I will touch on some very shortly on briefly on theorem and the dynamics of the model equations, but I will emphasize more on algorithms and on the simulations. So here's the contents of my talk today. I will start with a very short discussion about the concepts and some existing methods for clustering and feature detections for large data sets in high dimension spaces. And I will discuss some of the challenges for finding patterns in larger data sets. I will spend more time to discuss two popular methods for clustering in larger data sets, the so-called ProCast. This is basically a statistic approach, and I will also talk about a very popular neural network architecture called ART, Adaptive Resonance Theory. I will talk about the structures, the strings, and I will talk about the shortcut. And then we'll present you the neural network architecture which we are trying to design to compensate the shortcut of the two, the approaches, ProCast and ART, and I will I will describe the theorem part, the model, the architecture, the algorithms, and I will probably, if I have time, talk about dynamics. And then I will conclude my talk with not only just talk about the success, but really the limitation and some of the work we are trying to do now and some of the work we are expect to do in the future. Now, I believe most of us know what do we mean by clustering. By clustering, we mean try to group similar objects together. So if you look at this picture, if from this data set, if you identify through groups of data there already, you already find three clusters. So abstractly, what does it mean is given a data set in a given Euclidean space, we want to partition this whole data set into several subgroups. Those are disjoint union of disjoint subsets. I want to partition this data set in such a way that objects in one cluster are similar to each other and subjects from different clusters are dissimilar from each other. So apparently this arrives in many applications, and I'm sure many of you have those kind of applications in mind, and probably many of you have done those kind of tasks in your commercial applications. And I should also mention that this is very common cognitive tasks by our central nervous system. That's the key to the research, that's our philosophy of research. I may come back to that later on. There are several approaches to this problem, and this is indeed a very classical problem. And roughly speaking, we can say there are four basic approaches to this problem. The first one is the so-called parameter estimation of mixture models by parametric statistics. The idea is as follows. Assume you have k clusters. Assume you have k groups of data. So assume each data is generated by certain random processes, and each random process is characterized by certain parameters, the mean, covariance, and so on and so forth. Okay, so the idea in this approach is try to use the data to estimate the parameters in those random processes so that for each given point, the probability for a given point belong to each cluster achieves maxima. And this maxima is achieved not only for single point, but for all points over all clusters. So that's the idea of the parameter estimation of mixed models. This is basic statistical approach. The second approach is vector quantization of data set by optimization. This is no surprise. So what we're trying to do is try to partition a data set into several groups of subsets, such that points from the same cluster are similar to each other and points from different clusters are dissimilar from each other. So what this means is we try to partition the whole data set in several groups, in K groups, such that if you pick up from each group pick up representative, you want every point from that cluster to this representation to be has a minimal speed, minimal distance. You want this to be this minimization to be done not only for single cluster but for all clusters. Okay, so this is simply a minimization problem, but it's highly non-trivial optimization problem because you don't know how many clusters. Finding the number of clusters is one of the tasks in this pattern recognition task. Okay, you do not know what will be the reasonable representation of each cluster. Sometimes it could be simply the statistic center, sometimes it could be something else. That's something I'm going to talk about later on. And also what's important is what do you mean by similarity? Finding the similarity is the most difficult part in this cognitive task. I put here the two vertical lines for those who are trained in mathematics. My misunderstanding is the Euclidean norm of the distance of two points. But it's not necessarily true. There are so many different types of similarity measurements. And finding a suitable similarity measurement from a given data set which you do not know much about structure is the key and the most challenging part of the clustering task. And there are other approaches, for example, fuzzy clustering algorithms. This is the algorithm where we try to partition the data set so that a single point is not necessarily belong to a single cluster with a certain probability 1 or 0, but we assign a point to a cluster according to its degree of membership. So a point belongs to a certain cluster with a certain membership rate, for example. And there is another approach, the neural network approach. That's the one I'm going to talk about. The neural network approach is based on a very simple observation and a very simple philosopher. So if you look at the picture, you see three clusters of data. If you have done so, actually you have done a cognitive task of clustering, pattern recognition. Your central nervous system has already done the clustering task for you, whether you realize or not. So we have done this clustering and pattern recognition task in our daily lives almost every minute. That's somebody does it better, somebody does it badly. That's what you mean by judgment. Okay? So it is this very simple observation that our central nervous system performs this task of clustering pattern recognition so often and so well that we believe it will be realistic and reasonable to approach the problem in such a way. First of all, we would like to understand the mechanism of clustering by our central nervous system. We can do this very well with very small data set in no-dimensional spaces, especially if two-dimensional, three-dimensional, we can use our vision system to do the classification. Okay? The advantage of this approach is once you understand the mechanism, once you build a mathematical model to mimic the computational performance of clustering pattern recognition of central nervous system, then you can design that second stage. Then you can design an algorithm, and even artificial intelligence system, to do the task, to do the clustering and pattern recognition. The advantage of this, then you can take advantage of the modern computing powers, so that you can do the clustering not only for small data sets in no-dimensional space, but for larger data sets in high-dimensional spaces. Okay, so that's the philosopher behind our approach and the neural network approach. And there are, of course, some success stories. The covariance naming vector quantization and the self-organized maps have been proved to be very useful for clustering problems. And in some cases, it can be shown that actually this reduced to the k-means or k-middles methods, which is very popular statistic approach, but it's really an optimization approach. Okay, so and the second approach, popular method, is so-called adaptive resonance theory, which is built on our understanding from both psychology, neurophysiology, about central nervous system function of clustering. And I'm going to get into detail about this architecture later on because our new architecture is built on this theory. Okay, there are some other neural network approaches. I don't want to get into details. And there are some new recent developments about clustering in larger data sets in high-dimensional spaces. The challenge in finding clustering high-dimension sets is tremendous. This is because of the so-called the curse of dimensionality. What happens is because the dimension is very high, then for every given point, the probability for those two points to be far apart with respect to a certain dimension is always large. In other words, for every given point in data set, in high-dimensional space, you can always find certain dimensions such that the two points are far apart from each other. Okay? And therefore, the clusters are formed not in the full space. The clusters are formed in subspaces. So the clusters are formed in small subset of dimensions. And finding those subspaces, of course, is not easy job. And therefore, most clustering algorithms so far are preceded by the so-called feature selection. What you do is pick up certain dimensions which you believe are realistic, are related to what you're trying to do, especially when you do the marketing analysis, relate to a certain market, relate to a certain product. So trying to pick up certain dimensions which you think are most related, and then prompt off all remaining dimensions, and then try to find the clusters with respect to the dimensions you are selecting. Okay? The big challenge is, given a data set without too much knowledge about this data set, asking the user to find the dimensions where the points are correlated is a big challenge. And the most algorithms are sensitive to what you're choosing, which dimension you're choosing. And therefore, pruning off some dimensions might lead to a significant loss of information and therefore rendering in results meaningless. Okay. I don't think I have time to go through the example. And therefore, it seems to be very necessary to talk about the so-called projective clusters. By projective cluster, it means a set of dimensions and a set of points such that those points are correlated only with respect to this set of dimensions. For example, in this particular data set I show you there, this is no dimension data set, there's only three dimensions, the highest dimension I can really show you in the picture here. You have two projective clusters. There's one group of data down there. If you project this group of data to the vertical plane, then those points are close to each other, and therefore those points together with this horizontal plane gives you a projective cluster. Okay? There's another group of data down there. If you project that group of data to the horizontal plane, then those points are correlated, are close to each other, and therefore they form a cluster. Notice that in this example, if I pick a point from on the bottom and from the top down there, then you can see those two points are quite apart from each other with respect to this vertical dimension. So the points are correlated only with respect to no dimension space. Okay, so that's the idea of the projected clustering. And again, the challenge is enormous in finding the project clusters, because the projected clusters can lie in arbitrary subspaces of no dimensionality. We don't know which subspace those points can form a cluster. And to make it worse, different clusters may form in different subspaces. In the first example, you have two project clusters. Each cluster is formed in different subspaces. Okay? And the dimensions of the subspace associated with each project cluster cannot be identified in advance. Finding those subspaces is the key in finding the project cluster. Okay? And again, the number of clusters should not be identified in advance. Okay, finding those number of clusters is also a big challenge as well. So when the IBM research group started the concept of projective cluster, they also proposed an algorithm called ProCLUS, standing for projective clustering. This is basically a combination of statistic approach and optimization approach. Okay? It's based on the so-called K-Meadows method and using a greedy technique, that's the optimization technique, and certain locality analysis to find the set of dimensions associated with each Meadowid. The basic idea is as follows. What you do is you start with the number of points called the seeds. Okay? Just randomly pick a certain number of points. And then try to form clusters according to these points, That's easy because simply pick up any point from data set, find the distance from this point to those seeds, and the seed which has the smallest distance will be represent that point. And therefore, you partition the data set according to the distance. And therefore, have natural clusters according to the cluster seeds. And for each cluster formed around these seeds, then you try to find the dimensions, which are with respect to which the points are correlated. And then you throw out the remaining dimensions. Okay? And then you try to merge those points or throw out some bad seeds and so on and so forth. That's what the grid technique is about. Okay? And then try to do optimization. That's the basic idea. The advantage of this approach is it can, in some cases, find projective clusters. The disadvantage is, if you recall what I'm talking about, you have to input two important parameters. You have to tell the algorithm in advance what is the average number, what is the number of clusters, and what is the average dimension of each projected subspace. The reason is simple. Remember, for each given cluster, for each given seed, when you form a cluster around it, you have to find those dimensions with respect to which points are correlated, okay, and then throw out those remaining dimensions. So in order to decide how many remaining dimensions you have to throw out, you have to know roughly what is the average dimension of each cluster. Okay? And as I say, you have to throw out bad seeds, try to merge the process, and so on and so forth. And therefore, you need to know what is your expected number of clusters. Okay? So the key disadvantage in this approach is you have to know what is the average dimension of each project clusters, what is the number of the clusters. Okay? And of course, to ask a user to identify those parameters is a big challenge and not realistic. In the common language, it's not fair because finding these two parameters is the key component of your projected clustering. Okay, what is worse is this algorithm is sensitive to the choice of those parameters. On one hand, you know you have tremendous challenge in identifying those parameters, and in many cases you are not going to get the right guess. But if your guess is wrong, then your answer is wrong because the algorithm is very sensitive. Here's the simulation of this data set I showed you before. If you tell the algorithm, I want to find two clusters in two-dimensional spaces, the algorithm will give you the right answer. I don't need to show you that right answer because that's only two clusters down there. However, if you say, well, I want three clusters, I expect this group of data will form three clusters in two dimensions, the algorithm will give you the result in the borrowed picture, and will split one of the clusters into two. Okay? And if you tell the algorithms, okay, I will find three clusters in three-dimensional space in the four dimensions, then the algorithm will split the data set into four clusters, into three clusters. Each natural projective cluster is split into two. And this is not surprising because you want to find two clusters, you want to form three clusters in the four dimensions. And therefore, you put these two group of data together in red. Two global data in red together because those are points are close to each other in three-dimensional space. Okay? So that's the problem with the Pro class. As I mentioned, there is another popular architecture in neural network which seems to be capable of finding clusters in arbitrary number of arbitrary points, arbitrary dimensions. That's the so-called adaptive resonance theory designed by Gail Carpenter and Stephen Grossenberg from Boston University. The architecture is as follows. I have to say a little bit about this architecture because our algorithm is based on this with certain with other new developments. It's a reflection of what you think your central nervous system is doing for you, for the clustering task. And the network consists of two layers of neurons. Okay, the so-called input layer, that layer you do the pre-processing of your data sets. And there is another layer which takes the task of clustering. That's called clustering layer. Okay? These two layers are connected by what we call synaptic connections. Connection from the first layer to the second layer is called the bottom-up layer. And the connection from the upper layer to the bottom layer is called the top-down weights. Okay? The two connections. And there is another mechanism called richness and reset, which I'm going to talk about later on. It works as follows. So you have a data set. The number of neurons in the first layer is exactly the same as dimension of the record. Okay, so if I record, which has say 2,000 variables, then you have 2,000 neurons in the input layer. When those data are imported into the first layer, they activate the neurons. The neural become activated and generate some activities. Okay, and this output of each neural will be broadcasted to the top layer through the top-down weight, and each weight has a certain synaptic weight coefficients associated with that. Okay, so the collective signal will be sent and broadcasted to layers in the second layer, the so-called cluster layer. And the second layer, the neurons are connected to each other. They are competitive to each other. And this is, again, is a realistic biological reflection of what the naming is doing. The naming is by competition. You have certain, you have several theorems trying to explain the same phenomena, and therefore each of them is trying to compete. I'm the real theorem to represent it. In other words, here is each node represents the cluster. Okay? Each node is trying to compete for the output signal and try to be a candidate to name this pattern. So, because it's a competitive layer, trying to put this network together so that compete with each other, and therefore the biological competitive exclusion principle holds, which says that the node in the second layer, which receives the collective output signals from the first layer, will be declared as a candidate, to name the pattern. Now you have to know which this candidate is a true representation of your pattern. That's the so-called richness and reset mechanism doing. What you do is you use the top-down weight to represent the statistical mean, top-down from the first, second, the top layer to the bottom layer to represent the statistical mean of each cluster. Remember, each neural in the first, each neural in the cluster, the cluster layer represents the cluster, and therefore represents the group of data. For that group of data, you can design. You can decide by what you mean by statistic mean or features, and that is recorded through the top-down weight. Okay. Once that node is declared as a candidate named pattern, you compare the node, the compare the statistic mean with the output again. If it's very similar to each other, then you say, okay, this is a true representation, and then you need the node to represent the cluster. Okay. What do you do then? You update the weight. You update the top-down weight. Reflect the new patterns you name. You also update your top, the bottom-up weight to reflect also the patterns. So you update the weight, the two weights, two-way synaptic weights, the top-down weight to reflect the new features you name, and the top-down weight, the bottom-up weight to reflect the new weight you name from this pattern. Okay, so there are certain. That's why we talk about dynamic systems. You update the weight, update neural activity of each node simultaneously for each given data set. Okay? So that's the adaptive richness theory. And the advantage of here is this does not require you to give the system the number of clusters in advance, because you can put as many neurons in the first, in top the cluster layer as you wish. And it also allows users to control the degree of similarity, because as I mentioned, there's a degree of similarity check with the statistical mean is very similar to the pattern you're trying to name. Okay? The disadvantage is R cannot find the project cluster again in the full space. Can find clusters in full space, cannot find project clusters. There are several reasons for that, because first of all, R is designed in such a way to really to find similarity patterns in the full space, not in the projective subspaces. And there is a certain pre-processing, the normalization processing involved in ART as well. The ART is basically is originally designed to find patterns in the image processing. And for the image processing purposes, you also the contract the fraction is important, because what you're doing here, the picture you see here is the same as picture when you adjust the focus. Okay, so still represent the same pattern. So this contrast rate is not important, but it is important for social data. Census data, if you find ratio, different ratio has different meaning. So that's another reason why the art designed by Carpenter and Goldsberg does not work for project clustering. Okay? And this example is a simulation by art for this particular data set. And as I show you in previous example, if you ask R to find the clusters of this data set, R will tell you you have three clusters. Because R does the clustering in the four space, then again, those points in red are close to each other in the four dimension, in the original three dimensional space. Okay? So what we're trying to design, what we call, I think it's better using. That's the architecture we're trying to design. The idea is very simple. What we're trying to design here is the basic architecture is still the same as ORC. What we're trying to do is associate with each node in the processing layer, you add a hidden layer for similarity check. What happens is follows. Once the data are imported to this layer, the output signal generated by this input will not be broadcasted to the second layer immediately. So there's a hidden layer to compare your output signal with your statistic mean. That's the top-down weight. Okay? And if it's very similar, if this output signal from this node is similar to this top-down weight, then you know the signal to be broadcasted to the corresponding neural or node in the clustering layer. Otherwise, to shut off the communication channel. Okay, otherwise short of communication channel, and therefore that dimension will not be counted in your clustering in the future. Okay, so that's the basic idea. Of course, in the model, the dynamical system analysis, the algorithm will completely changed. Okay. Now, again, as I mentioned, this is based on ORD, and therefore, in the first layer, still have the competitive intuition. Again, as I mentioned, competition is, in fact, is optimization procedure. And also, you're trying to update, eventually you will have to update the connections between the clustering layer and top layer, that's naming, and that's related to the parameter identification. So it's a combination of the two approaches, parameter identification, or naming, and optimization. The major modification we're trying to do here is try to hide hidden layers to do the similarity check. Well, here's the result. Of course, there's no reason I should say more about this simulation. It does find two project clusters, otherwise the algorithm will be complete failure. And here's another example. I think somebody say mathematicians are not good in technology, and then perfect example. This is another example. Again, for illustrative purpose, no, it doesn't work. What should I do? Zoom in. I apologize. Okay, so that example I'm trying to design here, you have a net input data, eight points. It's in four dimensions. The reason I want four dimensions is you cannot see the picture. Okay, now import this data to the algorithm. The algorithm will return you two clusters. And if I give you this set of eight data, it might take you quite some time to figure out how many clusters. And the algorithm returns within second two clusters, which is very clear why there are two clusters, because these four data points share the same first and second dimension. I mix up the data set, so it's very difficult to see that. And then the second set of data share the second and third dimension. Okay. Now, if you using this data set input to the algorithm again, this data set can be further classified as two clusters, for example. Because the It has two, first two clusters, because the two clusters share the same one, first, second, and third dimension, and so on and so forth. Okay? I want to show this picture. This is called POP tree because it's important also for application and for fast computation. What happens is, once the ART is the parallel processing, ART is parallel processing, POP is parallel processing. Once the data set is imported to the algorithm will tell you which cluster belongs to, either belongs to this one or belongs to this one. Once it classifies this, for example, the data set belongs to the first cluster, then this data set can be, then this together with the previous data already classified will give you another group of data. This can be further classified, and this can be done in parallel. This can be done in parallel. Okay? This is important because cluster tree is important for users, because the user can decide where you should stop. And for different purposes and for different users. Okay? Of course, this is not what we're really trying to do, because the dimensions we know, the original idea of the algorithm is trying to design an algorithm which works for high dimensional space. So we design another experiment. What would be the best way? Continuous. Let me tend to just screen. All right. So what we're doing is we now try some experiments of larger data sets. We have 10,000 points. Each point is the 100 dimensions. Okay. I know this is not big enough for most of you guys. And for census, for statistic calendar dealing with 2,000 or more than that the variables. But this is the one we're trying to do. We have 10,000 points. Each point is in 100 dimensions. And by the way, the journal editors think this is more than enough. That's important for us as well. We have five clusters. We created those clusters in random fashion, which we can control. But there are five clusters. What is important is, each cluster is formed in different subspaces. Each cluster is formed in different clusters. For example, the first cluster formed in dimension 13, 16, 21, so on and so forth. And the second cluster formed with respect to another set of dimensions, so on and so forth. So these points are very nicely distributed. Each cluster has about 20,000 points. And they are formed, again, let me emphasize, in different subspaces. Okay? And here is what we found. What we can find is, we can find exact five clusters. We can find exactly five clusters. And the points belong to cluster one we found, and the original cluster, that's the so-called, reflected by the so-called contingence table. The diagonal element of this contingence table tells how many points belong to the same cluster, to the input cluster, the original cluster, and the cluster we found. And off-diagonal elements belong to, those the points where you fail, really. Okay, so for example, in the first cluster, we have about 2,200 points. The cluster will correctly locate about 2,000 points, about 133 missing, are not correctly located. And the second cluster, for example, we have more than 2,300 points, and you located more than 2,300 points. Only 3 points are mislocated. This is, the five standard is a very impressive contingence table. What we found is found exact five clusters. What we found is the exact centers of the clusters. What we found is we cannot find the exact set of sub-dimensions. The dimensions I found is here in the first table. It's much smaller than the original set of dimensions of project subspace. This is not surprising. You don't need that you don't need so many informations. What I need is, what happens is, this subset of dimensions, together with the centers we correctly located, is sufficient for us if we refine the data points according to the centers, according to the subset of dimensions, and we refine the points. And after the refinement, we can completely recover the original clustering structure. That's the key. Okay? 5 more minutes. So we there's no time for me to go through the algorithm. We do have a code. We do have software to go through the whole computation, find the centers, find the clusters, and find the correct dimensions. And there are some theorems tell you this is indeed the case in some cases. And so let me just go through some conclusions. First of all, as I mentioned, traditional methods do not work efficiently for high-dimensional data sets because of the curve of dimensionality. And secondly, by comparable results with two popular methods which we know of and which claim to be able to find clusters of points in high-dimensional spaces, we find our method does outperform these popular methods. And as I mentioned, our simulation on high-dimensional data sets do show that we are able to find the correct number of clusters, correct center of clusters, and sufficiently large subset of dimensions. Okay, and therefore, using those information, if you try to refine data points, you can recover the original cluster structure. And of course, there are some theorying which shows that this is the case if the original data set satisfies certain nice properties. And there's no way we can show at this stage to show this it works for all cases. Okay. Just some feature work. What is the most important work we're trying to, we think we have to do in order for this to be useful and acceptable by the users is we should be able to find clustering arbitrarily oriented skew subspaces. What we're doing here, we assume that those dimensions are independent. So we want to find projected clusters with respect to the original variables. Okay. However, in applications in data sets, many of you have in mind, those variables are correlated. Okay. So what we're trying to do now is try to find modify this approach so that we can find clusters, not with respect to original subsets of dimensions, but in skew subspaces. And there are some other development trying, for example, design this for fuzzy variables and so on and so forth. And we'll be happy to hear your comments. We'll be happy to try to modify and design our algorithm to fit the needs of particular product and particular users. So that's all.